It's time once again to dig into the Pryor Center for Arkansas Oral and Visual History for an archived featured interview. Ozarks at Large's Jacqueline Froelich frames for us the life of lawyer and political figure George Haley, a member of the Pioneer Six who integrated the University of Arkansas. George Haley is also the brother of noted author Alex Haley, both of whom have partial roots in Arkansas.
In the winter of 2006, the Pryor Center team traveled to Silver Spring, Maryland to film the oral history of then 81-year-old George Williford Boyce Haley at his home. Pryor Center Associate Director Scott Lunsford conducted the interview.
Mr. Ambassador, if I could have your name, your full name, and you could spell it for us, that'd be great.
My full name is George Williford Boyce Haley.
George Haley was groomed from birth to be educated. He was born in Henning, Tennessee in 1925 to Simon Haley, a Cornell-educated agriculture professor, and Bertha Haley, a music teacher. His family, including his older brother Alex, moved various times in pursuit of their teaching positions. One of George's favorite childhood memories was in central Oklahoma, a Christmas circa 1930. His mom had put out coffee and chocolate cake for Santa, and it had snowed overnight.
And Dad had gotten out and put some sleigh tracks on the roof, up to the chimney, you understand, to see Santa coming down the chimney.
Sadly, George's beloved mother passed away when he was in elementary school, a vivid experience which made him question God.
Why would he do that? I went down to my class after I got enough together on it, and I checked around. And nobody else's mother was dead.
His father remarried a college instructor who George described as authoritarian. Several more step-siblings were born, and the family settled near AM&N College in Pine Bluff in 1939. George Haley said growing up in black districts shielded him from white racism, but soon he was consumed by it.
Whites would expect you to get off the sidewalk, you understand, till they pass. The train, if you were going on the train, you sat where colored folks sat. That was a way of life.
He described sitting on the backs of buses or train compartments directly behind engines spewing noxious fumes, forcing riders to close windows, even on hot summer days. He became skilled in scouting colored sections in restaurants and colored restrooms. All schools and colleges were segregated, as were businesses. Long car trips had to be strategic. Certain towns with histories of race violence were to be avoided. And as he came of age, George Haley realized he had to comply with Jim Crow, because if he didn't, he placed himself and his family at risk. After graduating high school, George Haley was drafted, serving in the U.S. Army Corps. He did basic training at Fort Dix, New Jersey, later was dispatched to Williams Field, Arizona, traveling by train. Of course, he and his Army buddies had to stop and eat. The restaurant posted no signs, so they sat down in a corner spot.
And a young white waitress came up to us and said, "I'm sorry, you soldiers can't eat here." All of us are fully uniformed, just out of basic training. These things happened. Here we were. You obediently got up, something in your system isn't right, but you obediently get up and go to the other part. Where the blacks are sitting.
Supposed to be.
Yeah. Within a very few minutes, another train had come in, on which there were some German prisoners under guard. And they were ushered into the white part of the restaurant from which we had just been asked to move.
The year was 1944, and although united against the Third Reich in Germany and fascist Japanese incursions, our nation remained pathologically divided by race. Time and again during the interview, George Haley expressed quiet outrage after being subjected to society's separate but equal rules, which he said were not at all equal. But he acknowledged the experiences forged a certain strength of character. He didn't talk much about his military career. He attained the rank of sergeant, but did elaborate on using the GI Bill to pursue a college education. He completed his undergraduate degree in history and political science in 3 years at Morehouse, a black college in Atlanta, graduating with high honors. There, George Haley said, he was taught that if he wanted things to change, he had to make them change. among his classmates was Martin Luther King Jr. Accessing a postgraduate education in the South at the time was difficult, so certain black students started to sue all white universities for access. To avoid litigation, the University of Arkansas at Fayetteville took defensive measures.
The University of Arkansas decided to admit its first black, Silas Hunt.
Silas Herbert Hunt entered the University of Arkansas Law School in 1948, the first land-grant university in the South to integrate. At first barred from studying with white students or even using college restrooms, he attended one semester before contracting TB and dying a year later. Jackie Shropshire of Little Rock was next to be admitted, followed by Christopher Mercer, and then George Haley in 1949. Black law students were segregated in the classroom by a wooden rail and barred from studying in the law library.
It was two floors up. What we would have to do is to check out if we needed a book, and we could. We couldn't use the restroom. Somebody complained about our using the student restroom. So the beginning was that we used the dean's private restroom, which meant that we had to come through his office, get the key from his secretary, and go through his office to his restroom. Okay. That, of course, was not working too well because of a lot of things, not from our standpoint. But then it was decided that we would use the faculty restroom, which meant that we would go through the students' restroom to get into the faculty restroom. Just utterly ridiculous. But that's the kind of thing that happened.
George Haley stayed the course at the U of A, but not without intense trepidation.
George Howard and I were walking on the street by Razorback Hall. Football players were in there. And so it was a fairly mild day. They had the windows up. And so before we got to the dormitory, somebody inside said, "There come a couple of those nigger students." You understand? And so George Howard has he's really got a temper. He said, what's going on? You understand? I said, "Listen," I said, "George, we are going to walk by as if we don't even know they're there in spite of all of that." You understand? So we did. Walked right on by. Well, when we got by, somebody threw a golf ball. And it bounced on the sidewalk. On the side, George's side, he just bounced on, and somebody said, "You missed him," and they laughed, you understand? I said, "George," I'm telling myself as well as him, I said, "We will continue walking. We're not going to run. We're just going to continue walking as we are."
As they walked away, the students tossed a Coke bottle that smashed nearby. Verbal and occasional physical insults were commonplace, George Haley said. Still, within 3 years, black students were allowed to live on campus, and George Haley achieved membership on the staff of the Arkansas Law Review. He graduated June 1952, and after passing the bar exam, he left the state behind, moving north to Kansas City to practice law and raise a family with his wife, Doris. Although he didn't discuss it on tape, Haley's firm, Stevens Jackson, is considered the architect of the landmark civil rights case, Brown versus the Board of Education. After serving as deputy city attorney, George Haley was elected Kansas State Senator. He moved to Washington, D.C. in 1959, where he was appointed by the Nixon administration as chief counsel to the Federal Transit Administration. He went on to serve under six more presidents, including as general counsel and congressional liaison of the U.S. Information Agency, chairman of the Postal Rate Commission, and spent time overseas, most notably as U.S. envoy to Gambia. In 2003, the University of Arkansas awarded George Haley an honorary doctorate degree. But during the Pryor Center interview 3 years later, George Haley spoke little of his 50 years in public service. Rather, time and again, he reflected on the intense bigotry he perennially had to face.
But in spite of all of these things, there is a different kind of, let's say, awareness. First, you have to really be aware. I'm not suggesting that a lot of people, a lot of whites, are aware of this kind of thing. Mm-hmm. You see, enough of them are that they still, in many instances, consider themselves superior as over against blacks. Now, when you come to how you feel, blacks feel about themselves, how I feel about me or my family, I certainly have not felt inferior. I'm not inferior by any means. I really feel sorry. I mean this seriously because of my religious feeling. Mm-hmm. I feel sorry for a white person who thinks he or she is superior because his skin is light. You understand?
Yes, sir.
Again, I deal with a Bible quote. If a man say he love God and hateth his brother, he is a liar. For how can he love God whom he hath not seen, and hateth his brother whom he hath seen?
George Haley's interviewer, Scott Lunsford, is white and has no compass for growing up black in the Deep South. Yet his considered responses throughout the nearly five-hour interview with Haley showed a rare capacity to be both empathetic yet scholarly. Scott Lunsford was also acutely aware of how much George Haley's been pressed to talk about his older brother Alex Haley, the popular author of Roots, the saga of an African-American family, and co-author of the autobiography of Malcolm X. So Lunsford saved that query for last.
I can say to you that all of Alex's life was not just that happy. You understand what I'm saying?
Absolutely.
He would come to little brother to certain kinds of to get certain kinds of support. As I said, he was big brother, mm-hmm. but the family actually pretty much depended on me for the support. Alex would say that. He would tell people even after Roots. But I can tell you that we were very, very close.
Although it did not come up in the interview, Alex Haley was haunted till the end by allegations that he breached copyright laws, lifting sections from the book The Africans for Roots. One formal charge was reportedly dismissed. The other settled out of court. Alex Haley died in 1992. But his little brother, George Haley, now 88, continues to travel and speak about his life as a civil rights pioneer. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jacqueline Froelich.
For more history, visit pryorcenter.uark.edu.
The KUAF and Friends Holiday Giveaway is Friday, December 14th. The drawing, your chance to win a gift from one of many generous KUAF underwriters. Participants include Adventure Subaru, Mason Creek Farm, Collier Drugstores, Lifestyles Car Wash, and more. Registration and details available on the web at KUAF.com.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Springdale, Fort Smith, and Peter Pender.
Peter Pender, Arkansas.
Right. Sounds like a tongue twister.
It is a tongue twister.
It's southwest of Ozark.
Peter Pender. Mm-hmm. What's the story, I wonder?
I don't know.
Right? There's got to be a guy named Peter Pender.
There has to be.
Let's put that on the list.
Okay.
That's something we have to find out next week. Peter Pender.
Among many towns that we found.
If you had a business in Peter Pender, it would have to be selling pickled peppers, correct?
Right.
Okay.
I think so.
Peter Pender's pickled peppers. Ozarks at Large is a production of KUAF. I'm Kyle Kellum.
I'm Christina Thomas.
We'll be back together Sunday morning at 9.
Yes.
With Weekend Ozarks at Large. Antoinette Grajeda will be back with us, or back with me, tomorrow for a new edition. It's good to have everyone back in.
It is.
I'm over the flu. Antoinette has had her wisdom teeth out. You were healthy
Knock
the whole time.
Knock on wood that I stay healthy.
Yes, we appreciate that. All right. Thanks so much for listening, and have a pleasant
Thursday.